Okay, people in the back row are still having so much fun. Setting a bad example. Okay, we'll move on, and we're actually going to finish up quantum mechanics today. So, before we start on relativity next week, moving to relativity and black holes, and then kind of leading up to quantum gravity on the very last day. And so that's where we're going. But today we have another talk on dark matter. So you heard about Lee talking about bond and modified Newtonian mechanics or the dynamics. And he was a little bit skeptical about the need for dark matter. Maybe there are alternate theories which you don't need to explain. You just have standard gravity with normal matter. So what you're going to hear at from 10:30 to midday is Cliff Burgess. So Lee talked a few times and said Cliff will come in and give a different view about dark matter. And he will. So he'll give a very positive view, arguing in favor for it, showing you the evidence. So it's kind of weird, may seem a bit weird, that two scientists are disagreeing with each other. But this is research, and no one knows the right answer, and you get this all the time. So have a look, be skeptical about both of them, and skepticism is incredibly important into science. So you all seem to be good at that. You're being skeptical about me and the questions, well, by asking me lots of questions, which is what you should do. Should not accept anything I say. So, this is good. Except for that. You know what I mean.
That's good, you know what I mean.
And the very last thing we'll have, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. today, we have a talk on teleportation. So, this is something. And the interesting thing is that the mathematics is, again, not too complicated. It's just simple linear algebra and vectors. But it's the concept. The concept's very, very cool and very, very kind of subtle. So we'll be hearing that from one of our researchers, Carlos. So you met Carlos yesterday. And those of you taking the quantum memory project will know him, if you remember him. Sorry? Oh, are you in Ward's group?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is interesting. So remember I said there were different ideas and approaches and interpretations to quantum mechanics. So people in Ward's group, you learn about pilot wave theory. And you... And I guess, did you tell other people about it?
No.
Okay.
They tried.
Really? So hands up who likes pilot wave theory.
We got it on craft.
Hands up who likes many worlds interpretation I talked about.
Hands up who knows the pilot wave theory gets rid of many worlds interpretation.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. And as I mentioned, this is, again, you're at the forefront of research. And there are differences of opinions that no one really knows what's happening. It's very kind of philosophical. And I think each of these viewpoints has their own advantages and disadvantages, as I think, you know, pretty much everyone will admit. Sometimes, so the one thing with pilot wave theory has got to give you a picture of what's going on. So I won't explain that now, but if you'd like an explanation, see anyone that put their hand up. So Matt, or anyone else. Okay. Okay, so we're... So I've got a game for you to play in a little while, about half an hour. But what I'd like to do is, so we're going through all this math here, and okay. So we saved the diamond some of the time, and we looked at, and I talked in this very hand wavy way. We saw actually what that really meant. So we talked in a hand wavy way about the sort of photon taking two paths at the same time, both being reflected and transmitted. And what did that really mean? What that really meant was, whenever we had these strange states here, which were like that, and so I said that in just sort of classical physics, Newtonian physics, the only states we could have would be So if you shove tennis balls into that interferometer or the series of mirrors, they can only take one path at one time. So they either have to go one way. Exactly, or the other way. So these are the only two possibilities you have. But what quantum physics does, it opens up a whole new range of possibilities. And remember I said, well, you drive for me the conditions. So this is the one element of this matrix, the 2-1 element. So the only condition we need to satisfy those general quantum state is given by 1-1. Remember, we'll take the magnitude of it because it could be a complex number. We square that. So that's any possible state which satisfies that condition is a valid quantum state. So we can have states like this, and that is a superposition state. It's kind of an addition or a superposition of two possibilities at the same time. And that mathematically is what scientists mean or what physicists mean when they talk about superposition states. You can maybe think of this as like an AND operator, where you have this possibility happening and that possibility. And superposition. And so that's superposition, where you get two possibilities combined with each other. And it's, I think I mentioned this yesterday, but something that runs all throughout quantum physics. So Ray Laflamme talked about the double slit experiment, and you had, I guess, sort of two slits here, and then a wall. And they've done this experiment where they have what's sometimes called an electron gun, so a really, really hot metal filament sort of fires out electrons, and they go out in various directions. They've done this, so they've only got one electron coming out at any one time, so a very small flux of electrons, and they've fired them out this wall here, and very, very high speeds, and you have to get very, very narrow slits here, so this distance here is, I think, of the order of about a micrometer. And what they found was, it seemed that, actually I'll take that out, each individual electron was going through both slits at the same time. So Ray talked about that, you mentioned that. And so what does, and then you see the interference pattern where you get the constructive interference kind of there, and they just represent patches where you get so it's kind of hard to get, this is I guess the side on view, but you get cases, we get lots and lots of electrons detected here, and you get very few there in between, which is, again, very strange if you think of the basically classic, it doesn't make sense. So you saw that. You've probably, a lot of you heard the double slit experiment before. But what is actually happening, really, is this phenomenon of superposition. It's a superposition or a combination of the electron going through both slits at the same time. And if you think of the wave function for the electron, if you write down the wave function for it, then it really is and then this plus for superposition, where we have that slit one and slit two. So again, this is sort of a hallmark of quantum mechanics and really the strange effects we have. And superposition, so if you look at entanglement, which we'll look at in a little while, perhaps the strangest thing in quantum physics. Einstein never fully reconciled himself to it, He called it spooky action at a distance and called it telepathic. So we'll look at that. And superposition plays a key role, absolutely there. Things like quantum tunneling. Oh, is it, are these different notes? Right, okay, good. Quantum tunneling, where you actually have a solid barrier and actually get individual atoms and electrons actually kind of, instead of, they don't have enough energy to sort of get over a barrier, over a hump, but they actually basically tunnel through it. And yes?
Is this effect not in Zener diode?
It could be, I'm not sure. There are some. So yeah, it could be. You get that in. So there are actually some transistors where that actually use it involve quantum tunneling. I'm not familiar with details, so I don't know. But definitely there are some solid state technologies that use that. And so quantum interference effects in general, superposition is there. So it's really everywhere, and it's one of the defining features, as we'll see. So we'll come back to the game in a little while, but a second core picture, so we can see from, is genuine random, so sort of real randomness, if you like. And you can see that in... Sorry?
Sorry, you're missing the word thing.
Well,
surely we can, as physics is predictable.
No.
Oh, it's a continuation.
So, and we can see this in the interferometer we looked at before, that when each individual photon gets to there, as far as quantum physics tells us, it's purely random. No matter how good an experimental we are, no matter how carefully we actually check and look to see what type of photon we have going through, it's impossible, in principle, impossible to predict whether it will go here or here. And you get exactly the same thing with radioactivity, an individual radioactive decay. If you have an individual amorphous amount in a smoke detector, you might have it at home. Quantum physics says it's impossible to predict exactly when it will decay. Now, you can probabilistically do it if you have 1,000 americium atoms. You can say that, well, you know, in an hour, 500 of them will decay, or 400 or 300. So we have these excellent statistical laws, and we know about those because we know that each of these values here gives a probability. So overall, over an ensemble or a large number, we have three predictions. But individually, it's fundamentally random. So, and we can't predict which path the photon will take. So this is kind of a strange thing. And so when you think about it, because normally we think, this is a quote there by a famous, I think, 18th century French scientist. We normally think of physics as all about predictability and determinism. And if you know the initial conditions, where the state of the system is in, you can predict exactly where it will be in principle. In 1 year time, 10 years time, or even a couple of seconds time. But quantum physics really breaks that, sort of breaks this deterministic kind of paradigm down. And so again, it says it's a genuinely random event. And what I mean by a genuinely random event, we talk about random events. And we talk about, say, if you go to, if you're playing a game or something, you have 2 6-sided dice that you roll, and we say it's random whether they roll up being 1 or 2 or 3. But at that level, in some way, you can say, well, it's not really random, because if we knew exactly how hard we pushed the dice when we rolled them, exactly how high we threw them, exactly what temperature they were at, exactly where all the air molecules around them were at, and how they were bouncing off and interacting with them, and et cetera, and that type of detail, then we could figure out, in principle, exactly whether they would roll 1 or 2 or 3 or 4. And so even though it appears to be us, as far as we know, we cannot predict, it's unpredictable, it's not really random, because in principle, we could predict. And so quantum physics, the randomness, what I call it genuine randomness, is something different to that. And interestingly enough, this has a commercial application, and it's one of the first commercial applications of quantum physics. So there are companies today, real commercial companies, and you can buy genuine random number generators, not these classical random number generators or pseudo random number generators where you have a computer and they go through some fancy mathematical algorithm to spit out what appear to be random numbers, but it really in principle, you could predict what they are. These, so that's the company there, in case anyone is interested in buying them. And advertising slogans include when random numbers cannot be left to chance, and that's an actual picture of the device. And so I think it's good, or you think it's interesting, that one of the first uses of quantum physics, all this intellectual brain power that Einstein contributed to, that Niels Bohr, is including gambling and lotteries. So, okay. And this actually brings up, yes?
So unlike dice or like flipping a coin where you say it's random, but you could actually get like a
50-49
split, like this one would actually have to be 50-50 every time.
Well, it could be, it's not really that. I mean, generally if you set up the experiment, it's going to be 50-50, but you could get 50-50 with the coin. But the point is that, you know, in theory, if you figured out all the positions of the air molecules around, you could predict whether it will be heads or tails of the coin. But if you tried to do the analogous thing, if you tried to look at exactly how the photon went in and exactly what frequency it had, even that would not allow you to predict. So that's the difference.
So through quantum mechanics, would you get a 50-50 split every time, or could it be different?
It could be different. So, I mean, when they do the real experiments, it's not going to be exactly 50.0000% and 50.0000%. So most of the time, it might be 50.0001% and 49.999%, for example. So it can be different. And I should have said, you can actually make these mirrors so that they split them 70-30, or basically whatever probability you like.
It'll be really close to that.
Yeah, very close. They can actually make them quite accurate. So it's kind of interesting from a philosophical point of view. And that is, can things just happen for no reason? Can things just occur for no root cause whatsoever? Because that's what quantum physics seems to be telling us. And it's very hard to actually get your head around this idea, just this radioactive atom, for example, just popping out of existence and spontaneously decaying, and there being no kind of rhyme or reason as to why it actually does that. But this is what quantum physics seems to say. Okay, so we talked about polarization, we saw that. And remember, it's this idea that when we think of light, we should think of it as electric and magnetic fields, electromagnetic radiation. And most of the time, a lot of the light, for example, light coming out, the light floats up there, it's unpolarized. So the electric fields in that are just going every which way. So I guess it's a transverse wave, so the electric fields are going in every possible right angles or perpendicular direction to the direction of propagation. But a polarized beam, polarized light such as this watch or my BlackBerry screen or your computer screen as you were playing around with yesterday, light's going in this direction, and vertically polarized electric fields just kind of wiggling up and down the field lines vertically up and down. And this is exactly analogous to, I could get a rope and I could throw the other end to Michael at the back. It could be a big rope, and I could wiggle that rope up and down like that. And if I did that, obviously just the plane of oscillations of the rope would be vertical, and that would be a vertically polarized rope. And this is exactly what we have here. It's just, instead of a rope, we have the electromagnetic field. So that's polarization. And in particular, this is okay. So vertical polarization. Okay. So, and remember I said we can have a whole beam of light, an individual big beam of light be polarized, but an individual photon it can be polarized. So it's kind of, we've written sort of photons as just little kind of circles like that, hard particles, but they have a wave-like aspect, as I keep saying. So maybe a kind of better picture of a photon is kind of a little wave packet, so this localized wave here. and could be propagating in that direction. So a photon can be polarized. And one way of summarizing how it can be polarized is just a... Right. And so obviously horizontal and vertical, they're just words that are too big and complicated for physicists to write out, so we'll just be using V and H for horizontal and vertical. And so this is kind of how we can, I guess I should extend this down here and along here. So what we can do is we can represent in this just two-dimensional vector diagram the polarization of a photon. So obviously horizontally polarize the unit vector there, and I guess it's a vector, we'll use the kind of this symbol vertically, and then I guess this is sort of 45 degrees. And we have any angle we like. So these are, yes?
Does it come from the origin?
Yeah, it does. It may, must come from the origin. But that's really, well, yeah. Yeah, but this is just a representation, so that's the easiest way of doing it. So we have. So all this represents, so what we can do is we can kind of look at the vectors on the graph and read them off. And so obviously this one here represents a photon that's horizontally polarized, vertically polarized, and here what we have is, think of this as a vector, it has a horizontal component and a vertical component. So this 45 degree one, so we can think of that. One over root two vertical. And so we can think of that one sort of 45. As a 45 degree photon, a photon polarized in the 45 degree direction, as kind of a bit of horizontal and a bit of vertical. And where I've got the 1 over root 2 is obviously from cos pi over 4. So these are the two components of this. And so the most general state for a photon, or polarization state, is actually where we have just changing the 1 over root 2s to A and B. So we have. State like this, but the condition it's a unit vector, so the magnitude has to be equal to 1, and so the magnitude is the square root of a squared plus b squared, therefore that's the condition we have to satisfy, that's just saying that it has to be a unit vector. So this doesn't look too bad, but we're physicists, and so this is, have you seen this notation before?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're physicists, so what we have to do, we have to invent our own notation for everything to make it look more impressive. And so when physicists write that, they don't write them down with arrows over the top, because everyone else does that. So we have to, so people will think we're smarter, we have to invent our own notation. So I'm going to introduce, some of you may have seen the Ket notation before. Have you, Kent, if you've heard of that, about Ket? Okay, that's fine. So it's just exactly the same thing. So it's just a vector, just a different way of writing a vector. So it was in the map primer. So what we'll do is we'll just change H. And it's exactly the same thing, but we'll just represent it by putting a vertical line here and a little, I guess it's a greater than sign there. And vertical, it's exactly the same thing, it's a vertical line and then a greater than sign. And this, symbol here is called a ket, the vertical line and the greater than sign. Typically you have something here in the middle. So And so it's the same thing, we haven't changed anything, we've just changed the notation. Just the notation change. Just as sometimes people use a different symbol, people use a little squiggle underneath. Same thing, different notation. So just the ket notation. And so this comes actually from Paul Dirac in the late 1920s. And a British, very, very famous British physicist. And the reason it's called the ket notation is, well, it's actually, there's actually another one, the other way, which we might get into, that looks like that, and that's called a bra. And so if you have a bra and a kit, then, and you put, exactly. And so this is actually a joke name. So, sorry? The C just pops in there. And so apparently when he first introduced this to Cambridge University, you know, a very serious place in the 1920s, for his class, he was kind of laughing as he was doing it, because he made it up, and he thought this was incredibly, incredibly funny at the time. So I've never met anyone else that says that. So there's actually a long history and tradition of joke names in physics. So for example, there is actually something in physics in, I guess, condensed matter physics called a bujang, which is, don't anyone laugh, it's a serious technical term for a particular type of excitation you get in superfluids. So it's a very serious thing. And there are also, WIMPs, which are, of course, weakly interacting massive particles, which are a candidate for dark matter. So, there are, don't laugh, you can, every single one of these, you can find serious papers written in serious journals with squarks and sparticles in them. This is stuff, these are people's life work that you're laughing at. Because the thing is, in physics, so when you all go to become physicists, or if you go on to become physicists and you invent something new, then you can call it whatever you want to, basically. There's no rules, there's a committee saying, you know, you have to call it this or whatever. So, so as long as you can get past the editor of the journal, that's mainly the main problem. But these are all serious terms. And so bracket is a joke name. So, okay.
What's the bra?
The bra. We'll talk about that later, but it's probably the easiest way of thinking about that is a ket is a vector, so it's represented by a column vector, and a bra is actually a row vector because it's kind of a dual vector. So it's
the transpose.
Yeah, the transpose. Yeah, and then transpose and then complex conjugate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yes.
So is bracket a combination between bra and cat?
Yes.
And it, how do you write that? Like if you say I have a bra and a cat?
Oh, sometimes you see a lot of things which are like, actually I'll go up here. You see a lot of things like this where A, and that's a bra and a ket together, but that's kind of abstract, so you can think of that as being A11, A12, a row matrix, that's just two elements, that's just one and that, and then A, two, like that, but then that's just a number because you can use matrix multiplication. That's just equal to A11, B11 plus A12, B21. So that's an example of, in the math notes, that's sort of an inner product. So that's what we have. So Carlos may be talking about those, but that's not really important. So with that new notation, what we're going to do is just rub that out and put... Okay, and now we're writing line physicists. Okay, so this is what we have. So what I'd like to do is to give you a couple of examples. some exercises to do. I think I've been talking for long enough. So, okay, so one. Second one. And then going the other way. And then extra question. Is that, can everyone read that all right? Is that too small? Okay. Represent this state here. A equals A plus AH plus BV in the basis with the following basis vectors. So there's a plus basis vector, which is H and H there plus V divided by root 2 and then minus the second basis vector H minus V divided by root 2. So, okay. So have you done them all? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
There's more to be. So that's question for everyone. What do you think? Yeah, although it's kind of. So what's the.
I don't know.
I'll be in the negative. There, so. Well, okay, so. If I were to take this. So you're saying, right, if I were to take this, I should be able to draw, so could you just forget about questions and draw that for me? So this is sort of H, the direction here, and B, so that's plus one, plus two. So for this vector, what's the big? Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. Exactly, yep. That's it. Yep, that's it. Okay, how are you? Yep, and so really can think of these as components. So, So that's the magnitude, but that's the negative. So if a positive, that's the positive x. So if we put that, that's the negative direction. But we've got to say what direction that's in, so we're going to represent it as a vector. So really that's just a vector. So we've got to say that's the magnitude of it, but in which direction? The x direction or the b direction? So that's. Have you ever seen a vector with the two arrows? Yeah, and then you want to kind of resolve it with components? Yeah, so that's all I'm asking you to do here. So there's a component here, or this instrument here, we add up to this. So what I'm saying is, what are these components? Now, what you've done so far is just 2 divided by root 3. Root told me that that's the magnitude here, but we have to show me. So normally we have graphs and they have the same x as a unit vector. Yeah, so normally if we had this here, what this would be 2 divided by root 2. But it would be the minus, that's plus x direction, so the minus is the one. The minus would be this. And that puts plus in the y direction, so with the y component. Exactly. Yep. Oh, thanks, Michael. No, I've got the job. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's complicated. I wouldn't worry about that. But that's just, all that's saying is you can have. So I could have this x like this and y like this. If you ever see the effect of okay. Well, they just mean they have magnitude 1, right? So that's all that is. So, but when, that's not the only basis we could use. We could use a basis which has these basis x, and this would be x.
plus y all divided by x minus y all divided by root 2. And these are just two raised to, and I'd like you to represent this is a general pair here, so this could be anything. So that's a h plus b. So I'd like you to represent this pair here. No, it's not more than I'll talk about that, just because you, at the moment, you're representing this vector here in terms of this basis, the H and B basis. But there's nothing special about that. We could choose, I guess, a different set of coordinates, and we could choose. These two be our basic vectors.
What do you call plus and minus?
Oh, right. They are plus and minus are like x plus y divided by root 2 unit vectors, and minus is x minus y. Oh, physically. Oh, really? They're just at a 45 degree angle. There's nothing really special about them. Right. Sorry, what? Plus is just, in a sense, plus is defined by. Oh, okay, it's given. Like physically. Sorry? Do you want me to write down the definition of it? Oh. Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. Oh, wait. No, it would be, sorry. It would be there. Exactly. Yep.
So that's
Sam, you know we did the interferometer with so the interferometer like this. So and then we combine. So there's also a version where you can have this coming in and it gets split up into. It's hard to do. Maybe I can have this thing. So that's a beam split up. And you have something called a truther. And it splits it up into three components. And if you put lighting here, these have equal intensity. And then you can have them go up and recombine. Oh, you can recombine them and you can have another tree here. You have three apples there. And so this is exactly analogous. Here we have light split up into two, and then in a sense recombined we have two outputs. It's basically a kind of an analogous thing here, except we split it up into three. And so in this case we have, say, so the initial state might be 1, 0, 0, and then it comes out. And then we will have this magnitude. So there'll be a phase factor here. And then there'll be another phase factor here. And I think it's actually
Yeah, so this should be SCT player and control player. And so therefore you can figure out there must be some 3x3 matrix that is in this transformation. Let's go back to here.
Well, we have to
Yeah, that's true. And and you should be able to figure that out from one square degree matrix.
Yes.
Must be unitary. And then two the three inputs, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0,
They sit out on solid ones. Do you know what I mean by that?
So then you should be able to figure out what that is, and you should be able to figure out what the probabilities are there. And then into the three, there's, I don't know what it's called, but there's one that moves up to 4. And then there's one that moves up to 4. No, I don't think so. Just assume. I think you can ignore that because you assume that all the that's given the trade from 5 to as much as the trade. And you can assume you have, I guess, the piece of glass that has the extra trade in 5. So we're going to say you can ignore any of the ships. Yeah. 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 Are they done? Okay. Well, come back now. Thank you. Okay, so the first one, represent this as a cat. So we have a bit of a component in the h direction, but it's a negative h direction because this is a positive h direction, so it's a negative h direction, and a bit of a vertical component. And because this is at a 45 degree angle, those two are going to be equal in magnitude, just as Michael very generously drew that. And just as these two here, this side length, we have an isosceles triangle, these two are equal to each other, 45 degrees. So to find this component, since the whole thing is a unit vector, it has a magnitude of 1. So really we have a triangle like this with 45 degrees, has a side length 1. What we want to do is find out what this side is equal to and what this side is equal to. Because this triangle here is essentially just that triangle there. So we know this is cosine 45. And sine 45, which equals 1 over root 2, which equals 1 over root 2. So these are the magnitudes, but this is in a negative h direction, so this is negative 1 divided by root 2, but this is positive 1 divided by root 2, and this is in the h direction, so this vector equals
minus. And then plus. So answer the first one. Second one, same thing. Unit vector 1. Cosine 30, sine 30. And I've forgotten what they are, so.
What?
Ah, thank you, Michael. So that's a half. That's root 3 divided by 2. So the answer to this one is. And kit. And we don't have any minus signs because that's in the positive h direction and that's in the positive b direction. And so this one, we'll just do two, represent this as a in a diagram. And so what we have is draw this. The so it's, what was it, half, so it's 1, half, 1, and root 3 over 2, that's 1, root 3 over 2, so we got half along here, and then root 3 over 2 there, so it's looking something like that there. So that's the answer, and I guess the angle here, 6 degrees or pi. Okay. So now we're familiar. What we're going to do is we're going to play a game. And we might leave that one till later if that's all right. That was just an extra one. So, but the yeah. Well, maybe do that one after lunch, if that's all right. Okay, so the game is called the quantum game. It's a simple game, and you're going to play this. So what it is, so I actually, well, I don't have a coin, but, so. Sorry? So I'll use a piece of paper. So I have a piece of paper, and it's got H on one side and T on the other side for heads and tails. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to either make it heads or tails. So I'm going to put the X side up. And then I'm going to give it to Michael. And then Michael is going to secretly either choose to turn it upside down or not, but he's going to do that somewhere that I can't see, so I can't see what he's doing, so he can either just leave it as heads, I think I gave you his heads or flipped it, and now he's, maybe you're going to give it back to me, but I'm not going to look at it, so it's hidden, and you can trust me, so I don't see it, so what my goal is, I see the golden alley, so is to make the coin heads all the time, so I can choose to flip it over or not. And I'm trying to read Michael's mind, so I'm going to flip it over. And I win if this is heads, otherwise Michael wins. So does that make sense? Okay, so I lost that round, but so what I'll get you to do is a minute to basically play that game with someone else 10 times and to see how many times you can win. But we won't do that now. So that's the first thing. And what should become obvious is that if you think about it, is that you can't win all the time. So I don't know what Michael's doing. So you can't win. I mean, you can cheat, but you know that's no fun. So, but there's actually a way to use quantum mechanics to win all the time. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'd like you to tell me what it is. So, okay. Thank you. And what I'm going to tell you is the rules are we're not going to use a piece of paper or a coin, but we're going to use a quantum coin.
Yeah.
And ordinary coin, a quarter, it can only be heads or tails. But a quantum coin, remember I said superposition is everywhere in quantum physics, so a quantum coin can be heads and tails at the same time. So, what? Pilot wave theory? And so if we wanted to represent it mathematically as a superposition, we might put kets around it. So that's a quantum coin. It's heads and tails, superposition. And we could actually represent a quantum coin by, again, a two-dimensional vector diagram. And I've put vertical and horizontal there because I guess instead of a quantum coin, we could just use any... It doesn't have to be a coin. It could be anything that could be up or down. So Michael and I could play this game. Hopefully this makes sense, where I could have a little arrow that could be pointing up or down, just instead of heads and tails, and I could give it to Michael, and he could decide whether to flip it or not. So does that make sense, that translation of the game?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we'll do is, instead of a quantum coin, we'll use... Well, it's really an example of a quantum coin is a photon. And we've looked about that in polarization. So this is the same graph we were looking at before. So it's just our quantum coin. And horizontally polarized photons might represent a quantum coin in tails. So that's what that is. And a vertically polarized photon represents a quantum coin in heads. And so I could give Michael a horizontally polarized photon. That would be like giving him a coin with tails. He could choose to rotate the polarization around to vertical or not, and then give it back to me secretly, and I'd have to somehow try and get it around to, I guess it would be horizontal in that case. So, and so he can choose to flip it from H to V or V to H. So that's flipping from tails to heads or heads to tails. Exactly, just translating heads to tails to horizontal and vertical. But the only other thing you need to know is this is the... So if there was no superposition, there's no weird property was seen, it would be exactly the same as before. But again, you can have the superposition. This is the most general superposition of a... Actually, I should just to make it concrete. So actually, that's easy. So H is equivalent to heads, and V is equivalent to tails. So this is the kind of mapping, I guess, we're going to use for, and that's horizontal and vertical. The thing is, if Michael, so this is the only rule you need to know. If I make my quantum coin, and I make it in a superposition state, because I'm allowed to do that, quantum physics lets me, and it's this superposition state here, I guess the most general one. Actually, I haven't. So we've been looking, I guess, at particular examples where... We've had definite numbers here for the coefficients of H and V, but we can use variables instead of definite numbers. So the most general superposition state is adding another level of complexity is A plus B, and as you know, A squared plus B squared as to equal to 1. So that's the most general superposition state. I think I mentioned something like that before. And if you have the flipping, Michael acts to flip that, what that does is it flips both parts. So it flips AH, so it flips the H to a V and the V to an H. So that's the rule for how a flipping acts on a quantum coin. So the only other thing you need to know is that, just as in the classical case or the standard case, when I get the coin back, so again, quantums, we can have the superposition. So the flipping or the not flipping, that's how it acts on a superposition state. So that's very important. That's very important there. And the final thing is that the final step is I can choose to flip this or not flip. And the analogous thing of what you can do here with the photon is you're allowed at the end of the game, so the person who's trying to win, to rotate it around by any angle you like. Oh. But it has to be one specific angle. Oh. So if Michael gives the coin back to me, or this quantum coin, if you like, I'm allowed to rotate it by, say, 60 degrees. I have this black box that can... take in a state and then rotate it around by any angle theta there. Sorry? Negative angle, yep, absolutely. So, so that's important as well. So you're allowed to rotate it. So I'd like you to do two things. First of all, play the version with the paper, the classical version 10 times with someone. See how many times you win. And it'll be obvious that you can't win all the time, but try and win as many times as you can. So if you're... the other person is trying to make you win as few times as you can, so it's adversarial. So play it 10 times, and then figure out a way to always win using the quantum version. Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay, thank you. No, that's fine. Yep. Okay, great. Thank you.
I'm going to I'm